Hi there. I have a couple of announcements before we start. First, the book I wrote with Anne, The Afterlife Revolution, is available on Amazon for pre-order for your Kindle and will be available for Kindle, for all other e-readers, in paperback and as an audiobook read by me on December the 8th. I'm also going to be on Coast on December the 8th talking about it, and I have to tell you honestly, I am so excited about this, so amazed. Anne came back. She did it so cleverly. When you read the book, you'll realize that the afterlife is real. I mean, I never say in the book, you've got to believe this, because I don't work that way. But you got to believe this, because it happened. Even Gary Schwartz, who is one of the great afterlife researchers, did a study of what was going on and ended up writing a foreword for the book, because it's awesome. She's not only is she still exist, she's good at communicating, very good at it. And it's just a wonderful, loving experience, the whole thing. So do take a look at The Afterlife Revolution on Amazon.com and anywhere else, too. It's just... Right now, just available on Amazon, but it will be available everywhere shortly. So I'm so excited, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you pre-order it or buy it or do whatever, because it is very, very, very worth your while. It changed my life, because now I don't just hope the afterlife is real. I know it is, and I know we can live in an entirely new way. We can be connected all the time to those we love in the afterlife. It's possible. She shows how to do it right in the book. Now, that said, now here's some weirdness. This week, we're talking about ghosts, right? So this microphone that I am talking into right now cut out during the interview completely. There was no indication that it was out at all. And so I ended up sounding like I was in a mausoleum, because it's just picking it up off of the computer's mic. And it's never done that before. And since it didn't do it either, we ran all the wiring. Everything is perfect. It just turned off for this show. And what do you know? It's a show about ghosts. So what better moment for Whitley to end up sounding like he's in a tomb? So bear with us. It won't be like that again, I don't think, ever. But it's a really fun, cool show. Brian Masullo has done something quite wonderful with his new book, The Ghost Studies. So do enjoy it. And just get past the weird, hollow sound. So here we go. Another great edition of Dreamland.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Hey there, this is Whitley. We have a great show for you today. It's a fascinating show about ghosts, but there's a downside. It's very slight. There was an audio problem, and my voice sounds a little bit like I'm in a tomb. But please bear with me, and you'll get used to it. It's a fun show. Don't pass it by, because there's a slight audio glitch. That won't be true next week, and it's a highly unusual thing to happen. So here we go. Have you ever seen a ghost? Well, I certainly have, and in a few minutes I'm going to tell you a family ghost story. And the reason I'm going to do that is we're talking to Brandon Masullo, whose new book, The Ghost Studies, has really inspired and excited me. He has a website, it's a good one too, hauntedtheories.com. You can reach Brandon on hauntedtheories.com. Brandon is a researcher into the paranormal, and he has been doing this for more than 20 years. He's a clinical therapist as well. Brandon, welcome to Dreamland.
Well, thanks for having me. I really am excited to be part of it.
Oh, it's so exciting. This is a wonderful, fun story, folks. We're going to really have a good time today. Now, I'm going to start out by telling a quick family ghost story that's one of my personal favorites, and we're going to build from there
into a whole new vision of just what's going on, because science's attitude and vision of this whole field is completely changing, and Brian is really up on it. This is an exciting book. Okay, here's the family story. We have an old house in Texas that's been in the family for 110 years, I guess. In that house, essentially nothing has changed. It's pretty much even the same furniture that was put in there by my great-grandmother when the house was built in 1906. In one of the bedrooms, there's a big dresser. And when some of the teenagers were at the house, you know, 35 years ago or so, there were two girls, sisters, one in one room and one in the other room with the dresser, side by side. And they were pretty much teenage rivals at the time. And one of them, the one in the room with the dresser, big dresser, woke up and saw her sister, she thought it was her sister, sitting at the dresser, combing her hair, brushing her hair. And the next morning at breakfast, she said, "Don't come in my room in the middle of the night and brush your hair." And the other sister said, "Well, I didn't do that. My grandmother was there, and she'd had, of course, long experience at the house. And she said, 'Well, I know that wasn't you,' to the girl, 'and I know who it was.'" And, of course, the kids wanted to say, "Who was it?" And she said, "Well, that was Rudy Toot Toot." And everyone laughed and said, "Who was Rudy Toot Toot?" And back in the old days, my great-grandmother used to be a big opera fan, and she would invite opera singers to the house. And they would generally come for a weekend and then go on their way. But Rudy Toot Toot was very special. She was tended to stay on after her invitation had already lapsed, and she would sit at that very dresser, brushing her long blonde hair and singing opera. And that's why the boys all called her Rudy Toot Toot. And Rudy Toot Toot has been appearing at that dresser off and on for nearly 100 years. So, Brandon, wow, let's get going.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I got plenty of them. But, you know, we're not here to talk about my ghost stories. I just wanted to set the scene for folks. Let's start with your, why did you decide to do this book? I know that's what you're going to say, but I want you to tell the listeners that there's a lot going on in this area.
Yeah, there really is. And I think that, you know, it's not that it's secret or hidden. I just think that sometimes it's brushed over. But there's a lot of new research out there. There's a lot of great stuff in neuropsychology. There's a lot of great stuff in parapsychology. And this is, when I say stuff, I mean entanglements, consciousness studies. There's a lot of more information on, results as far as telepathy and how that's linked to ghosts. So really what the genesis for the book was, I started just gathering all the research that was out there. And then as I'm gathering all this research, and I, at the same time, I'm still doing my clinical work, and that's doing, you know, psych evals and talking to people and just going to paranormal conferences. You know, I started noticing a lot of similarities between ghost stories and encounters, and then compiled with all this research and all these stories and similarities, I'm like, man, this is a good time to be alive. There's a lot of great information that could really give us new perspectives on these ghostly encounters. And that's really where the book came from. So it's a mixture of research. It's a mixture of talking to people, ghost stories, ghostly encounters, all that wrapped into one and on a piece of paper, if you want to say it like that.
Yeah, well, that is kind of what it is. Okay, have you ever had any ghost experiences yourself?
You know, I'm an oddity in the field, and for many reasons. But for one of the reasons is what got me into the paranormal was not an actual experience. I've never seen a ghost or have seen a visual apparition. I don't really have a cool story about a haunted house, anything like that. I just was really interested and got into it. In the book, I describe a story which has to do with some maybe telepathy type things where there was an animal in the backyard that passed away, and I felt like I kind of was linked to that animal at some point. But I don't really have a cool haunting story, and I don't want to make one up. But
don't do that. You're like Dr. Gary Schwartz, the famed afterlife investigator, who has never had any kind of contact with the afterlife. He describes himself as the Helen Keller of afterlife investigation. But, you know, it's not so bad to be an outsider. My wife Anne never had she had one brief UFO or close encounter, but never anything extensive. And that gave her the ability to be a much more objective observer. And free Dreamlanders, speaking of objective observers, here's a segue that's not going to make a lot of sense unless you do what they tell you to do. We'll be right back.
Notice anything unusual about unknown country? When you land on the site, you don't see ads about things you bought or things some data miner thinks you might like. Why not? Because when you come to unknown country, your visit is private. We don't use data miners. We don't report to them. When you come here, we leave you alone, which is as it should be everywhere. Another thing you don't see are video ads that start when you least expect it, pop-ups that interfere with your reading, clutter that distracts you. What do you see? Stories that go in depth, that see beyond where the general media will take you, but don't seek to confuse you with sensation and hoaxes. Plus, a gigantic news archive that's easily searchable with our powerful search engine and entirely free. Unknown Country. The Internet as it ought to be. The truth that others will not tell you. Want to keep it coming? Join us today. Click on the subscribe tab on the masthead and get started. Unknown Country needs you, and you need us.
And do we ever need you right now? We're in the process of putting up an entirely new unknowncountry.com website, and we're getting closer. A few months ago, we did a GoFundMe campaign. It came close to its goal, but it didn't reach it. And that goal wasn't something I made up. That's what we need. Now we're getting down to the wire. We're just about to deploy the new site. And we need you to go back to GoFundMe and give us a little bit of a boost. You can do it. You probably haven't done it before. Most people didn't. A couple hundred people did, but they nearly made all the difference. Can you join them right now? Go to GoFundMe, search on the word Strieber, Strieber, and take it from there. Go fund us. Unknown Country's full of magic. You know that. You can help. Do it now. GoFundMe, Strieber.
Whitley Strieber is the legendary author of Communion, Transformation, The Grays, Superstorm with Art Bell, and so many more. You can find out more on his author website, Strieber.com. Get his great new Journey to Dog Heaven, his classics, The Wolfen, Transformation, rarities like The Wild, and so many more. Strieber.com. And join Whitley on his Facebook group, Supernatural. Follow him on Twitter, Whitley Strieber, author of Wonder.
Hey there, it's Whitley Strieber, Dreamland. We're talking to Brandon Masullo, The Ghost Studies. His website is hauntedtheory.com. That's hauntedtheory.com. You know, it's so memorable, that website name, I can remember it for a couple of seconds. New perspectives on the origin of paranormal experiences. Okay, Brandon, let's kind of get down to the basics. There are a lot of theories out there, and you go through some of the more popular ones in the book. Tell us where you think some of these theories are going. For example, paranormal investigators think of in terms often of two types of haunting. Active and intelligent hauntings and residual hauntings. I think that Rudy Toot Toot was sort of a residual haunting, but what's the difference?
Well, the residual hauntings are sort of the typical ones that you see the most. So I believe you're right. I think Rudy Tutu would be a residual haunting. So the actual definition of a residual haunting has to do with apparitions or haunt-type phenomena that occur at specific locations, times, and even sometimes dates. So maybe a ghost that appears every Christmas and walks around the kitchen. These ghosts or hauntings are not, they're not conscious, and they're more like recordings that's sort of being replayed, like the Rudy Tutu brushing her hair sitting on the dresser drawer. So they're not conscious, but they're more like an environmental imprint. Active or intelligent hauntings are the complete opposite of that. And those are hauntings where you have a ghost that's sometimes interacting with the witness. So that could be maybe, you know, seeing a ghost of your wife and then your wife telling you, you know, check underneath the kitchen drawer. And then you go look underneath the kitchen drawer and there is, you know, $1,000. So in this case, you have a ghost who is somewhat intelligently guiding you or telling you what to do. So there's a huge difference between the two. But I would agree with you. I think Rudy Tutu definitely would be a residual on it.
Now, what about the other kind? What you have to say about this is quite fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about you mentioned something that Larry Flaxman and Marie D. Jones, Marie is a longtime Dreamlander. So subscribers, you can look at some listen to some fascinating Marie D. Jones shows on Dreamland. Anyway, they suggest the possibility that this involves moving between parallel universes. And, you know, when my wife Ann was alive, she studied the Close Encounter experience deeply and determined, and she was correct, that there was a connection between ghostly apparitions and alien contact, so-called alien contact. We don't think that's really what they are anymore, but in any case, we would have at our cabin in upstate New York, where we had so many people come and have close encounters of the third kind, usually at the same time that a close encounter was occurring in another part of the house, a dead person, perfectly real looking, would be appearing to other people and saying invariably that they were all right. Now, what about this possibility that there is another parallel universe involved?
Yes, and that's a popular ghost hypothesis, and it's gaining more and more ground of recent because of the, you know, all the research in the quantum mechanics and quantum physics, and those avenues of research, and you know the general idea is, and this could be, you know, some people term it differently, like portals or vortices or wormholes, or sort of these overlaps between parallel universes, and that under certain conditions, mostly environmental, there's sort of a, I guess you can call it a hole or a window into a different time. Now, this idea could be more along the lines of you're not so much looking at a ghost, but you might be looking back in time. So you might, a portal might open and you might look into it, and there might be a woman dressed in 1800s gear sitting on a grassy knoll with her kid. And then somehow they look at you, you look at them, and they somehow see you, and then they run away in fear. So the idea is maybe you're just looking at another time, like looking back in time or another sort of way to look at that. So it might not be like a ghost, but just sort of looking back into the world. And that's a popular theory. I think Marie D. Jones and Blackman wrote a whole, I think they wrote almost a whole book on that.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah.
Now, oddly enough, you know, I told you when we started that this would not be an ordinary interview, because what happens here is always the same. I have experiences for every eventuality, and I have actually had the experience of moving backwards in time once, which was terrifying, and because I won't go into it. My listeners have probably heard it, and folks, if you haven't heard it, send me an email if you're curious at whitley@streber.com, and I'll send you back a brief account of it. maybe, if I get time. Anyway, tell us the story of Anne. And this is not my Anne, folks. This is another Anne in the book. And what she experienced that drew you to think that this might be part of it.
I'll say the case example I got here. Anne had just finished eating dinner and was in the kitchen cleaning things up. And this is from Anne's perspective. As I was placing items in the dishwasher, I happened to look in the dining room. I was shocked to see a huge black void about 4 feet high, 4 feet wide, hovering above the ground. I immediately thought something was terribly wrong with my eyes. I looked away, rubbed my eyes, and then looked back, and the void was still there. As I walked closer, I could see a mother and her child inside the void. The mother and child were sitting together in the grass, talking and smiling while enjoying the bright, sunny day. They were dressed in what I would describe as 1800s clothing that I've seen in Western movies. It was as if I was watching a floating TV. The mother then made eye contact with me and appeared confused and scared. Terrified, she grabbed her child and ran away. They weren't ghosts, and I got the sense that they were as live as me. However, from a different time, it felt as if I was peeking into the past. So that is like a nice, typical example of this multiverse or this wormhole or this overlap.
God, it's so fascinating. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, when I read that, I thought to myself, where are we? And what are we? Why did the door open? Do you have any idea?
Well, these are so challenging to explain. And I think that when it comes to portals and wormholes and quantum physics, I tend to stay a little bit farther back from that. Because obviously quantum mechanics is the study of the smallest atoms and particles in the universe and subset of physics. So this is a pretty complicated mathematical equation. I think that at certain times, in certain situations, people themselves, whether it's an emotional thing or whether it's something else going on in the environment, somehow just get a peek into this type of thing. In the book, I talk about multiverses just briefly, and I really kind of say, you know, obviously Marie wrote a whole book on it, so I would refer to that one. To give more of an example of why that happened.
Now, let me ask you this. But wait a minute. Before I ask you this, free Dreamlanders, enjoy.
You've probably heard the music for years. It's the theme song for Dreamland. But you may not know the name of the piece. The O of Pleasure. Or the name of the composer, Ray Lynch. Ray Lynch is a 3-time Billboard Award winner. Ray is also the composer of the platinum album, Deep Breakfast. Pandora calls Ray one of the most influential artists in New Age pop and adult alternative circles. For music that will move your heart and set your spirit soaring, visit www.raylynch.com.
Aloha, Jeremy Vaney here, and I want to tell you about my latest undertaking, OurUndoing.com. OurUndoing.com is a multimedia website where if you watch, if you read, if you listen, without trying to absorb knowledge like we do with normal learning, and without the normal judgmental filters that we use to compare and contrast so-called spiritual knowledge, if we watch, if we read, if we listen, without all of that, we may just wake up to our full human nature. That is what this website is for. It's not about what we're doing, it's about who we are, truly are, when we're off the pendulum of duality. If your life is about seeking truth above all else, look no further. Join me at OurUndoing.com.
Okay, free Dreamlanders, we are back. Subscribers, you listened right through, so this has not been interrupted at all for you. Now, and think of it, free Dreamlanders, you could do this too. You could have this uninterrupted and so much more. It's a terrific show. It's got great archives, You don't hear anything like this. There's no other interviewer out there who can literally bring their own experiences to these interviews. It just isn't there. Okay. Now, let's go on, because you have got many different theories that you explore here, and I'm sort of working through them. What about the psi theories?
Yeah, so the psi hypothesis is, and a lot of the paranormal researchers nowadays sometimes forget about what's the base for a lot of the research that they do, and it actually started in the 1800s. So the psi hypothesis kind of goes all the way back to the 1800s. And really what the psi hypothesis contends is that, so let me backtrack. So psi is basically an encompassing term in parapsychology. It describes paranormal phenomenon like clairvoyance, psychokinesis, telepathy, ESP, those types of things. So the psi hypothesis, when it comes to ghosts, the general idea is that there's like person A, they send a telepathic message, usually during a very distressful event, which is picked up by person B, usually in another state or several hundred miles away. And this message is interpreted as, you know, auditory, hearing voices, visual, seeing, you know, people, and tactile, like feeling someone grabbing your arm or something, or even in the sense of an emotional impression or feeling. So the psi hypothesis contends that ghosts aren't so much these, like, external beings that sort of hang around and wait for things to happen, but rather the workings of telepathy, thought transference, communication at a distance, that those types of phenomena that goes on. So when we think about telepathy and communicating between person A and person B in several states away, we often think about reading people's minds. But with telepathy, a lot of the cases involve hearing sounds, overwhelming feelings of fear, concern, and alarm. And these are actually pretty similar to ghostly experiences. So these crisis apparitions that are pretty popular, and these deathbed visions, which are popular as well, spontaneous cases of paranormal phenomenon, they actually account for probably more experiences than actual haunting. So the psi hypothesis really contends that the ghostly encounters during crisis and deathbed visions could be the result of sort of telepathy or thought transference. You know, we've all probably had stories where, you know, we're sitting in our car, and for no apparent reason, we get overwhelmed with sadness, fear, and we just start crying. And then we get a telephone call from our brother or something saying, hey, you know, mom just passed away. And it just happened at the same time when I got that overwhelming fear, feeling of sadness. So this idea that it was somehow communicated to me at huge distances is the idea or the root of the psi hypothesis.
Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, I've had that. We've all had that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't pick up the last time it happened to me, but it's probably been within the past year, certainly. Now, you introduce a concept of ingredients, which I found fascinating. I'd never thought of it in quite this way before. The ingredients of processes that are present in ghostly experiences. I underlined this particular paragraph. Can you tell us exactly what you mean by the ingredients of a ghostly experience?
Yeah. So the ghostly ingredient theory is it picks up on these spontaneous cases that I just talked about. And spontaneous cases involve one-time occurrences of paranormal phenomenon, which for those who actually want to research that you can get a lot of wealth of information from one-time cases. There's less variables and things like that. But with the ghostly ingredient theory is really I say that there's three components that's necessary for what I call the crisis or deathbed apparition. The first has to do with the psychological aspects that go into it. So it's more like, I'll give you the actual equation, psychological aspects plus changes in bioenergetics, which is sort of our internal electricity, that triggers sort of this ability to communicate or send information into the external environment or the atmosphere. And then once something's in the atmosphere, it could link with anything and no matter how far away, sort of like our cell phone. Once once those signals get out into the atmosphere, they're linked at a pretty great distance. So really what the ingredient theory states is that psychological things happen, like overwhelming emotions, distress, life-threatening events. That is the catalyst or trigger that causes changes internally for us, bioenergetics, which then goes out into the environment, and then it links to somebody else. So the ghostly ingredient theory, and you've read the book, it's like probably two or three chapters. It goes over everything individually, and it gives you sort of examples along the way.
Yes.
So the reader can follow. Well, it's almost like a journey through what happens during these events. And then I make sure I emphasize what's happening psychologically, internally, and then externally as well.
You know, some haunted places aren't wonderful, like our house. It's haunted, our old house. There's more. I could spend hours telling you ghost stories about that house. But they're wonderful stories and fun stories. And they're like Greedy Toot Toot. They're all like that. We've never had a scary haunting there. My grandfather tried becoming the Duke of the house and came down the stairs one Halloween in chains, but he was very much alive and also discovered that walking down the stairs in chains was a bad idea because he soon fell over in any case. But what about bad hauntings? There are places that are absolutely terrifying where the hauntings are monstrous. What is the difference? What's going on there?
You know, I think that there's a lot of things. When you talk about the negative haunting, sometimes I think it's a lot of perception. But sometimes I think it depends on the tragedy that occurred there or the telepathic distress signal that was sent. So, you know, if you have a soldier who, Gettysburg is a popular one. If you have a soldier who's in Gettysburg and he dies a horrific death where he's bleeding and, horrible things happening. I think those ones, if a child sees, there's a difference between a child seeing a child brushing their hair on a dresser as opposed to a Civil War soldier covered in blood saying, please help me. And I think if you see the latter, then you automatically assume it's a negative or, a horrible negative entity. Whereas if you see a child laughing and brushing their hair, you sort of perceive it as a positive one.
Yeah.
But I think the actual catalyst or the base of both those hauntings is the same. I think what causes those is the same. Just one presents itself or is perceived as more negative.
One of the things that happens at our house every once in a while is the sighting of another house. In other words, the house is on a bluff, and there's a tennis court and some open area beside it. And to give you an example, my brother and one of my cousins walked out the front door one morning, and there on the tennis court was a complete other house. It wasn't like our house. It was a different house. It was an entirely different form of architecture, painted differently and so forth. They were young. They were just little, 9 and 10 years old. They rushed inside to tell my mother about this house that had appeared. And by the time she went out there, it was gone. But she wasn't surprised by it. What is going on when things like that, an entire house is like a ghost. The house itself is the ghost.
That's the first I've heard of. I've kind of heard of that before, but I've never, when I talked to somebody, actually gave me a ghost encounter like that. I know there's a parapsychologist in the 40s, George, I think it's Tyrell. He wrote a book called Apparition.
You mentioned him in the book, yeah.
Yeah. And he believes telepathy plays a huge role in these apparitions. And he goes over this very complex idea called idea pattern. And in his view of ghosts, he sort of goes over how why apparitions might appear in clothes, carry objects, or actually have these accessories like horses and houses might be involved in that as well. His idea is like this apparitional script, and it's pretty complex, but I think he would be, if you're interested in finding a little bit more answers about that book would be a good one to pick up.
And tell us the title again.
It's called Apparition.
George Tyrell, Apparitions. Unfortunately, he's passed on. I'd love to interview him.
Yeah, I think there might be a chapter or at least a section of the book about inanimate objects appearing as apparitions. So his theories and thoughts kind of revolve around that a little bit, because I think maybe what drove him was, why are ghosts wearing clothes? And why are they riding horses?
Yeah.
He couldn't understand, he was trying to figure out why that was happening. So look, that's probably what got him to write the whole book.
Or cars. I mean, there's a lot of situations where ghostly apparitions are driving cars. I mean, not physical cars, but cars that once were. There's even a case of someone in, gosh, this goes way back in Dreamland, somewhere back, maybe even before the archive was started in 2004, but I recall a guest describing an experience that he had had of seeing dinosaurs cross a highway, and I think in Minnesota or somewhere, and which it naturally upset him a good deal. And they were, of course, a ghostly apparition.
Yep.
But, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And, when we get into the second half of the show, folks, we're going to get down to some more nitty-gritty. And we've had a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot more fun in the second half. And the reason we are is that Brandon has got some fascinating material about the energies that are actually involved and how the kind of progress we've made in terms of understanding the way electricity is involved in this and electromagnetic energy and our own life energy. It's just absolutely fascinating stuff. So do stay tuned. And if you are a free Dreamlander engaged in the tragedy of leaving us just at the best moment when I have skillfully built up the suspense in hopes that you'll break down and subscribe again or subscribe for the first time, do it. We're talking to Brandon Masullo, The Ghost Studies. His website, hauntedtheories.com. There's a lot of video on Brandon's website. It's loads of fun. Don't miss it. Go to Brandon's website and get involved in this stuff, because this radio program is about opening the mind. And this is a wonderful way to do it, to open your mind to ghostly realities and to start to explore the world around you in a wonderful new way. Goodbye, free Dreamlanders subscribers. You don't even need to pause. We'll go right on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.